Matt. How's everybody doing?
Well.
Good, good. Had to compete with warm weather. That makes it a little bit more challenging, right? How many of you thought about waffling about coming tonight?
Sure.
Yeah. It makes it hard. But you came, right? So you get a whole lot of credit for that. There are other things you could have done, but you chose to come here. So that's very good. Very good. Remind everybody to turn the cell phones off. And I'm going to remind you, too, that this is kind of the last one that I'll be leading anyway. There'll be another session next week with Venerable Rabina. And I really would encourage you to come to that if you can. You can come to any of her teachings. She starts on Monday night. Is that right? With the Discovering Buddhism. But, you know, I'm sure you're welcome to come to any of them. And you'll get something out of it. I guarantee you'll get something out of it. So she's very, very worthwhile to listen to. So I'm not sure exactly what she's going to be covering in Meditation 101 next week, but I'm sure it'll be good. So I encourage you to come along to it. So that said, I'm going to try to condense what would normally have been session 4 and 5 kind of into one for tonight, just in case she covers something a little bit different next week. But so we'll start out with doing... Is this cutting on or off? No, it's working. All right. We'll start out with just a little bit of meditation. And I'm going to, after we kind of get started, I might do a visualization meditation. We can talk more about that after we get finished with it. So if you all want to kind of quickly review the 7-point posture. Is this their first night for anybody? Okay, good, good. So... On the cushion, sit towards the front of the cushion if you can, so your knees kind of hang a little bit lower than your hips. Opens up your spine. If you're on a chair, feet flat on the floor, back straight in both cases, like a stack of coins. Your hands in your lap, whatever's most comfortable. Right hand and left is kind of a traditional pose. Top your head upright a little bit, like it's dangling from a string, chin down. Tongue at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth, and your eyes either closed or a little bit open if you want let a little light in. And then, again, set your motivation. Y'all came tonight. That was huge. Make the most of the sessions as you can, and think about why you're doing this. And then if we want to do 9-round breathing to start out, we can, where we close the left nostril and inhale through the right, and pinch the right and exhale through the left. And then reverse that for 3 breaths, and then in and out of both for 3 breaths. Or you can just do either mind like an ocean, or count your breathing, whatever you choose. Now I want you to focus your attention on your breathing. Breathe normally and naturally, but focusing on the complete duration of the inhalation and exhalation. And then as you exhale, imagine all the negative energy, past mistakes, distorted conceptions, disturbed emotions, that they leave your body with the breath. Visualize all this negative energy as black smoke and send it out into space where it just completely disappears. And visualize this repeatedly with every exhale. So you breathe out negativities again and again. And then try to get a feeling of confidence that you're freeing yourself from all traces of negativities, faults, illness, delusion. And as you inhale, imagine all the positive energy in the universe entering your body through the breath in the form of pure, white, radiant light. And visualize this light flowing through your nostrils, down in your body, into every part and corner of your body, pervading every cell, every organ. And as you inhale, your body gradually becomes clearer and clearer, lighter and lighter and more transparent. And you can feel more and more relaxed, light, and blissful. So continue to concentrate on this experience, breathing out the black smoke of problems, illnesses, and negative energies, and breathing in the white light of purifying, blissful, good energy. and try to keep that vision going as long as possible. If you're distracted by feelings or sensations or something from around you, just simply observe these two without reacting or getting involved, and then imagine that they're transformed into that black smoke that you exhale. Okay, were you able to do the visualization? Keep it going. Your mind get distracted. Pull it back. How's everybody's week gone? We all had opportunities to practice a little bit, a few minutes. Anybody have anything they want to share? Obstacles, problems, successes? Good ideas, bad ideas, do's and don'ts. Do you find yourself getting frustrated with your mind wandering? Has anybody had that experience? You get irritated with yourself for allowing it to wander? Or just it wanders a lot? Yeah? Okay. One thing I had heard this morning in a podcast I was listening to, Alan Wallace was talking about relax, release, return was what he was saying. So sometimes we get, when our mind wanders, we get it's frustrating, right? There it goes again. So he suggests relaxing, because the idea is to get more relaxed and more focused at the same time, which is kind of counter to what we typically do. Usually when we get relaxed, we get less focused and try to fall asleep. We try to allow our mind to kind of drift off and lose focus. So relax, and then release the thought. Okay, and I think what that does is it minimizes our irritation with it. And I think you'll find that when when you begin to experience emotions arise, like anger, if you're out publicly or whatever, something's annoying you, you know, it's kind of that relax and then release that and then return back to your breath. So that's the exercise that we want to be able to control, is have that more relaxed rather than tensing up, right? We want to let go and then release it and then refocus again and return to the breathing. So I thought that was helpful, the way he described it. So, any other experiences anybody will share from the week? Are you finding the time of day is varying, or you've got it pretty well locked down, or you're still kind of all over the place a little bit, or you haven't even started? You're still thinking about it? That's fine.
Start getting
Yeah.
It's more about the posturing for me. Like my back is start getting you're straight for a while now. Hunch.
Gets uncomfortable?
Yeah, it start getting uncomfortable, even if I'm in a chair or if I be in the 7-point position.
Okay. Do you have a zafu like this at home, or are you sitting on a, what are you sitting on?
On a pillow.
On a pillow? Is it high enough, do you think?
No.
Okay. You might try a couple of them, or some way to get up a little bit higher. I personally found that helped out a lot. If I can get up high enough that my legs are down, my knees are down a little bit, it straightens up my back a little bit. It's hard to get comfortable initially too, but it'll come with time. You'll get more and more comfortable with sitting for longer periods of time, and it won't bother you. But you start to notice those things in your body, right? You start to notice those aches and pains. And those become a distraction. So at some point, you can just start to observe those and play around with them a little bit. Try to let that go if you can. It's hard. It's hard. How many of you have been able to let go of a thought since you started this? A thought arises, and you can let go of it. How many of you even thought that that was something that you could conceivably do before you started this? Or even thought it was anything you wanted to do? Right? I bet not many. At least I didn't, right, before I started this. So you've already learned a skill that, probably only 1 or 2% of the population has been able to even begin to do. So you've really made some great inroads if you recognize, I can let go of a thought, or I can let go of an emotion. Now, it doesn't mean it's easy to let go of the thought or easy to let go of the emotion. Again, the one podcast I was talking this morning, as you become more and more subtle and your consciousness, your focus becomes, you're able to focus on things that are more subtle. It's almost like he said it goes from big things to just fleas buzzing around your head. Just little irritating things that, and they get smaller and smaller, But you can let them go. But it's something, that's a skill that you've learned that will serve you very well, if you practice that skill of letting go of those things that bother you, And then begin we'll do some more analytical meditations tonight. Begin to pick up on the things that make you feel good and focus on those, like generosity. We have our opportunities to be generous are just amazingly abundant, and yet we just let them go, And we feel good when we're generous. Generally speaking, right? I mean, generally, that creates a good feeling. And so there's so many opportunities around you to be generous that we just miss those a lot of times. So, you know, you begin to kind of focus on small, the random acts of kindness, the little bits of generosity, you know, that you can provide for people. Kind word or whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be material things. It can be all sorts of things. And that's a letting go of something we try to cling to sometimes, right? And so we can begin to develop and deepen those experiences on a daily basis. And, you know, it just gradually changes things. You're turning a ship around. It takes a long time, you know, Justin. Anybody have any thoughts, comments, or anything they want to share? Yes, sir. Nope. Sorry, microphone. Thanks, Scott.
I had a question. What is the you that is letting go of thoughts? Going back in the first week, you mentioned like the tripartite structure of the brain, and I'm assuming the thinker is like the reptilian. Yeah, it's a very crude analogy, probably, but you've got this subconscious, this reptilian automatic system that's, you know, constantly making associations and bringing up sensations and thoughts. What is the part that's observing, is that the highest function of the brain, the most recently developed? I know in Buddhism, at least, you know, there's some idea that there is no you, right? Or at least some strands of it. But
yeah.
But even it's a complex question. But
it is.
Yeah. What is?
Not one that will answer tonight.
Yeah, that's fine. But I did
ask
just want to get it out.
No. So on a real quick level, and those of you that are Scott, you feel free to jump in here on this too. In Buddhist thought, there is the physical, right? There's the physical body, the brain, the organs and things, but there's awareness. Or sentience, or that which can cognize. It's an awareness. It's a first person kind of a thing that doesn't really exist. It's not. They don't associate with the brain. It's not. The brain. It can do things with the brain. And, you know, this is actually the neuroplasticity part of it, right? I can control my thoughts. That can actually change my brain structure. So that which is I can't really be the same thing as my brain, right? So they get down to the point where it's just consciousness. It's just awareness. And awareness and consciousness on a level, not just on this level, this gross level of consciousness, but on a very subtle level of consciousness, part of which we become aware of when we sleep, but then there's even more subtle levels than that. And it's that very subtle level of consciousness, just pure awareness, that they believe move from one life to the next. Okay? Yeah. That didn't answer your question. Yeah.
In molecular level, we are all one thing with everything.
Right.
And like on quantum level, on molecular level, we are all connected between each other and with everything around us.
That's right.
And like somebody told us, I don't remember, it was at the center in Thailand, they told us we are just a door, and like air breathes in and breathes out, which is just moving. When we inhale, it's brings it in, and we exhale. We just adore, and it's all one.
We've exchanged a whole lot of molecular stuff, even within the last, you know, half hour, oddly enough. But that's the way it is, you know. We're constantly in a state of flux. But the awareness, they don't necessarily correlate that with the brain. Yeah, come on around when Rabina's here and she'll there's a few folks around that'll help you kind of understand that. So I'm not good at that. That's not something I'm real skilled in talking about. So we'll keep it 101. But thank you for asking. Any other questions I can't answer? Yes, ma'am.
So when you're breathing, you said something about breathing naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very difficult to breathe naturally. It's a much longer, deeper, you know, go down to my toes kind of breath. Is that disrupting the meditation in some way, or is it totally up to you? I mean,
Is it a forced?
It's not forced, but it's not natural, because we never breathe. At least I don't naturally breathe so deep, you know, so long and deep.
Okay. And the breath probably comes from the abdomen.
Right. Usually it comes from here.
Yeah, yeah. When you get comfortable with it and you start breathing in that deeper fashion, you'll be able to do that more and more. And it feels natural. If it doesn't feel unnatural, then that's fine. I think that's what you want to be doing.
It only feels natural when I'm meditating. Otherwise,
okay.
It doesn't feel natural.
It doesn't feel natural otherwise. The more you meditate, maybe the more natural it'll feel otherwise. You know, that might gradually kind of begin taking in. Try, you know, when you're standing in line, waiting for something, try to just start breathing like that. You know, just relax. And release any thoughts that are going through your head. And just develop that awareness like you would, like, you know, we did the sky or the ocean. Just develop a kind of a broad sense of awareness of what's going on around. Do that while you're driving. You know? We talk about being mindful, right? And just being aware of what's going on in our surroundings. And so often we're not. So often we're mindless. And people think, well, if I do this while I'm driving, I'm going to run into something. But actually, you're much more aware of what's going on, you know? You're much more forgiving. You know, you find yourself, there's a little, again, opportunities for generosity, letting people in front of you, you know? And make up different stories about those people than what you might normally make up. The ones that cut in front of you or do whatever, you know? Because you start those, the reptilian brain starts those negative things. And we buy into that, you know? But you can change that. You can change the story that you're making up. And it's fun. And that story is just as valid as the other one we make up. Probably more so. You know? Probably more so. Yeah. Breathing. Sorry. Yes, ma'am. Oh, Scott's got to come running back and forth. He's got a Fitbit, so he's trying to clock steps.
So just going back to some of the struggles that we had with meditation.
Uh-huh.
So I've gotten more into routine of finding time for myself.
Okay.
But when I actually do sit down, I find that I'm not sure what kind of meditation I want to do.
Okay.
So I have trouble finding that focus point. So I'm wondering, is that something that maybe I should try to plan ahead and think of, okay, when I do my meditation today, I'm going to think of the water, like you brought into class.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm going to, you know, just kind of think of my brain as the ocean. You know, is there a way that would be, you know, more helpful in directing myself so I know going in, not spending time saying, what do I want to think about now?
Yeah, yeah. So you kind of ruminate on what you want to meditate on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a waste of that meditation time,
right?
A little bit, right? So
yeah.
I think that's a good idea, is kind of plot something out. What do you want to do? You know, get something, either if you're going to read something and follow through that, or if you're going to do, I don't know how long of a session you set for or what you decide.
It varies.
Okay, and it might be that you do a couple. You know, you might do just, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of focused meditation, and then maybe 5 or 10 minutes of some analytical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good idea I think that makes a lot of sense to kind of set it ahead of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You know, I think as you get more and more established in the routine, I find it's easier to just kind of go into it with an open mind and start working on something a little bit. But even I, you know, I'll go in and I'll have a book that I'll be working on out of for maybe a week or two, and then I'll, something will catch my attention at another point, and I think I'll start working on that and move around a little bit. I don't know that that's right. I'm not the best person to advise on that, maybe. Well, given this moment, I probably am, but, you know, generally speaking, I haven't talked to anybody about that, from a teacher standpoint, but I know there's a lot of variety you can do, but having that structure is good. And that kind of is a good segue into this next little section, and we'll answer some more questions about setting up that meditation session. And, you know, the quicker you can get into some routine of this is going to be the time and the place that I'm going to do it, the quicker I think you'll begin to see the benefits, and it'll become habit, right? We want it to become something that becomes a habit, like exercise and brushing our teeth and other kind of things. It's just stuff that we want to, again, develop from a habitual standpoint. So, you know, we're going to go into a session, and there's handouts on this one too, talk about, you know, preparation and setting your motivation. And you can do that when you get in there and sit down, but knowing what you want to meditate on a little bit maybe, and having that there. If you've got handouts, maybe having that there. Set your motivation. You know, I'm going to do it. And like anything else, you know, if you're going to take a trip somewhere, you have to make the decision that you're going to do it, right? And or that's the, kind of the first step. So you make the decision you're going to do this meditation. And don't have a lot of expectations going into it in terms of whether it's going to be good or bad or whatever. It's like going to the gym. You're going to have good days and bad days. The most important thing is just doing it on a daily basis, right? And then at some point you'll have more and more good days. Your back will stop bothering you. Your leg will stop falling asleep as much. Or it won't. You have to shuffle around a little bit. But you'll start to develop a routine that you'll get comfortable with. So you set the motivation. You prepare yourself. You set your motivation that why you're going to do it. And think about the people, you know, the people around you, the benefit that you'll bring by doing this and developing your mind. And there's a lot of that Kathleen McDonald book, and there's a lot of good books on, like impermanence and on that precious human life that we talked about a little bit, precious human rebirth. I think we talked about that, didn't we? Yeah, okay. And so that kind of helps you set your motivation a little bit. And then actually do your meditation that you've picked, you know, for that day. And then when you finish, you know, dedicate that. Even if it's just, you know, we have a thing here where we say we dedicate it to all sentient beings, right? So any living creature. Which is good. I mean, it's a good, nice, lofty goal, but maybe start out with the people that you live with. You know, you don't have to cast the net that big. So just kind of dedicate it to the people that you care about or the people that you work with, you know. And we'll do a meditation on equanimity here in a little bit, that people that you don't know, you know, you can dedicate it to them. And you can begin to kind of expand that a little bit too. And that kind of is a save button, right, on your meditation session. And do what you can for that length of time. But if you kind of go through those steps each time, you'll develop, you know, it'll become habit, which is really what you want. So, anything else on that? Yes, sir.
Just a question.
Uh huh.
Do you talk about reading?
Do you actually read during your meditation, or do you read the thing beforehand and then just think about it during your meditation? You talk about having materials in front of you. I just didn't know if you actually actively read something during.
I do. And everybody does this a little differently. You know, I'll do some just the focused meditation or the expansive meditation, and I'll do that for a period of time. And then I have some materials, like, again, I'll refer to the Kathleen McDonald book, or some of the one on equanimity that we're going to give out is a good one, too. You know, we talk about, I think I said we talked about precious human life, right? How how really fortunate we are, okay, to live where we do, have the faculties that we do, have what we call the life of leisure and opportunity. We have free time, right? We all have TVs, so we have free time. We don't spend every waking minute looking for our next meal. So to just, I'll have some meditations on that, just a reading on each, it might have each of those lines in it. Like the Kathleen McDonald book has one, and it says, imagine what it's like to be, be an animal out in the desert or wherever. So then I sit on that for as long as I can hold on to that. And just imagine, you know, it's an empathetic thing. I try to put myself in the position of being that creature in that situation and what it would be like. And try to just hold on to that experience as long as I can. And then I'll go on to another line and kind of hold on to that as long as I can too. And I do that with Buddhist readings, but you can do it certainly with other religious material too. You know, Bible, people do that with the Bible. So whatever you need that you want to work with and delve into, that's usually helpful. And there's a lot of, you can just Google stuff. Google precious human rebirth and you'll get a ton of meditations on, and you'll get it. And I just leave that in front of me and read it for a little bit and then just kind of sit on that. Okay. And again, the idea is to gradually gradually begin letting go of some of the attachments that we have to things and stuff, and just become grateful for what we have and just kind of try to just immerse yourself in that. And it feels good. It feels real good. And then you begin noticing that around you throughout the day, you know, that level of gratitude and stuff. So I don't know if that helped. Other thoughts? Anybody else have anything you want to bring up? Discuss? So how was the light going in and the smoke coming out? Could you visualize that? Did it help you? Did it feel like it was doing some good while you were doing it? Huh? So those are visualization meditations. There's a couple of them in the handouts that you can play around with. Read through it. You know, you could read that one and then try it for a while, right? And see what happens. So it's kind of like an analytical meditation, but not quite. They call it such, but it's not like the, you know, the water one that we did last week, or the one on equanimity that we'll do here in a few minutes. All right. What we're going to do now is break into groups. Does anybody have anything else they want to say before we break into groups? And I want you to talk a little bit in groups of, you know, two or three people. Triads are always good. And then discuss any benefits that you might have seen since you've begun taking this class, okay, for the last 3 weeks or whatever. Any benefits or any bad experiences that you might have had. And just kind of talk about that a little bit and see what we can kind of come up with. All right. Good discussion. Anybody have anything they want to share? Or talk about somebody else? No, that's not right. I was just kidding. Experiences, good or bad? Somebody notice the difference? Somebody notice what kind of differences? Yes, ma'am. You wait for Scott. Thanks, Scott.
I was saying that since I started meditating, my road rage decreased.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, I was kind of like that person driving, and a car comes by, or I saw my car in the mirror, and I'm like, ah, really? But now I'm like, oh, it's okay. And if I'm late, like 1 other minute late, already late, so.
Good. Is that a big thing?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good, good.
I usually curse my way from my home to work.
Okay. And you don't.
And now I don't.
Okay, very good. And I bet in all of that your blood pressure has come down. Not something you might notice at your age yet, but, you know, your blood pressure comes down, your heart rate slows down, or it doesn't go as high, right?
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of good stuff.
I'm not as frustrated when I get to work.
Yeah. And you go a little further, and then you can be offering that as generosity for someone else. You know, let them go in front of you, right? You can kind of turn that whole thing around. Excellent. Excellent. Yes, sir. Opposite ends of the room, Scott. Yeah.
With, I think the road rage is kind of a good example, but either from your personal experience or just others, I'm curious because I've experienced some similar things, just less irritation with things that, you know, sometimes can get my temper going or whatnot. But I still get irritated internally.
Uh-huh.
I just don't express it.
Okay.
Is that something, like, over time that you will sort of change your internal reaction and you won't be that person, so to speak, or have that emotional reaction any longer? Because I feel like that would be the true goal, you know. Otherwise, it's sort of just internalizing those same negative feelings, which probably isn't, I guess it's better than reacting externally, but, you know, long term, you don't want to internalize a bunch of emotions.
Right.
To some degree.
Yeah, so it's almost like it's a shrinking, right? So rather than the words coming out of your mouth, or, you know, in some cases, the fist, you know, being clenched or swung or whatever the case may be, you back up and you kind of let go, because that thought is what precedes the action. The action either be the words or the physical action. So you start out by bringing that back. And then those thoughts will begin to get smaller and smaller and kind of dissipate. Then you start working just with the thoughts. You know, why did that thought even come up? You know, and you'll start playing around with that. And don't expect them just to go away. It's just gonna, you know, they'll just kind of keep getting smaller. They'll still be there. They kind of bug you a little bit. It's a lot of work involved with that, but by refraining from the action is huge. You know, I think in the West we've got this concept that. I remember when I was a psychology student, you know, it was like, let it out, right? We're supposed to not bottle up, we're supposed to let it out. And this thinking isn't that way. This is more of, I picture it like dissipating. It's like, static electricity coming out of something, or it's just dissipating. And it starts out, it just gets smaller and smaller. But you're right, you're internalizing it. You notice it. And you might not have ever noticed that before. It just manifests as the words, you know? So you've recognized it and you begin retracting. But that's perfect. That's what you want to do. That milk story, I think I read that the first night or second night. You know, the first time as you go from being really angry to you just kind of, grumbling to, you're thinking about it in your head, and then you're kind of like, it just lets go. So that's perfect. So yes, ma'am, I'm sorry.
How about you personally? How less irritated you got with years of practice?
She asked how less irritated I've gotten with years of practice. I don't know. I really don't, because I don't.
Do you get irritated now?
Sure, I get irritated at things. And I think it's a lot, but maybe it's not nearly compared to what it was before. I don't know. It's funny because it's like watching yourself grow or watching somebody else grow. You don't, it's such an ongoing thing. You don't notice it so much. You're not so acutely aware of it. I'm sure other people are aware of it. I don't think I ever was a highly irritated person to begin with, but certain things do make me nuts, and now they make me less nuts. So I might have mentioned that friend of mine Andre that comes here, and his son was killed when I don't know if I talked about him at all in this class. So we were teaching meditation at Nash Prison, and we had been going together for a year or two, and he used to be a really angry person. He said had a lot of anger. And he noticed that it was getting less and less, and he's pretty calm. And once over Christmas break, we took time off at the prison during the holidays. His son was downtown Raleigh celebrating his 21st birthday and spilled beer on somebody, and a guy stabbed him and killed him. But to listen to Andre talk, to most of us that would just be devastating, and it was. But his reaction to that was he felt actually compassion for the guy that killed his son, and went to court to help lessen his sentence. He said, "My son's dead, but why should this guy started suffering the moment he stabbed my son?" And the prisoners, when we went back to prison after that, they'd heard the story on the news and stuff. And, they were all in there, and they were amazed at how he reacted to that. And Andre was amazed at how he reacted to it, He said, you don't know until you're confronted with the situation and how you're going to be. And he was confronted with it, which is so rare. And it bothered him, but he just didn't react. He didn't carry a grudge. You see people now that have this anger bottled up in them, and it kills them. It's tearing them apart. And he was able to let go of that because he knew there was nothing he could do, right? So that's an extreme. I mean, most of us aren't going to be in that situation. But it is a gradual thing, and he would have never had known ahead of time how he was going to react because he hadn't thought about it, So... Yes, it's an interesting story. But anything else? Anybody wanted to? Sorry, kind of down in there.
I had a lot of success last time we talked about when you have a negative emotion arising, just trying to draw attention to that and name it for what it is.
A negative emotion?
Yeah, uh-huh. Or maybe a negative reaction to something.
Mm-hmm.
And just by kind of labeling that. And trying to let it go. And during the past week, I've done that a few times, and I noticed a difference.
Yeah.
It's not as if the negative emotion disappeared or anything, but I think it kind of helped keep it in some boundaries, and it definitely changed my reaction to that.
Right.
And then eventually it did it did kind of go away.
Excellent. Yeah. It's just recognizing it, right? Really, when it comes on and labeling it. We often say I'm angry, right? But then you begin to say, oh, I have anger, and it's just something that arises. You know, oh, there is anger. There it is. I see it now. It starts out as a physiological kind of thing, but you can kind of see it bubble up and catch it. It's when you don't catch it or don't recognize it that you get into trouble. So seeing it is huge. So that's excellent. Excellent. All right, anything else? Anybody else want to share from the discussion? Let's do another meditation. This is on equanimity. And you might have done this similar one in Buddhism in a nutshell if you attended that. But it's a good analytical meditation. And it's good when you can practice. You can practice this a lot. I do this in a grocery store. I try to do, you know, in public places you can kind of practice it a little bit. So, get in your seven point position. Your seat or feet, your back, your hands, top of your head, your eyes, and tongue. And then take a few breaths in. Calm your mind, let go of things. It's like erasing the board, and we're going to put something on there for us to study. So you want to have everything else out. Now imagine in the space in front of you, there's three people. And picture them. Someone that you like, somebody you call a friend, someone you dislike, someone who irritates you, if you don't have someone you dislike. And then someone you may feel indifferent toward, a stranger, or someone you've seen but you don't know. And then we're going to keep these three images in our mind throughout the rest of this meditation. So first, let's focus on your friend. And allow feelings for that person to rise pretty strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely and truly a friend. That is, a person who's good to you, fulfills your needs and wishes, and then also recognize how you really want this person to be happy, and try to identify or let those good feelings kind of permeate. Now shift your attention towards your enemy or the person you dislike. Someone who's not necessarily kind to you. They don't satisfy your needs. Maybe they annoy you or make you angry. Maybe they've hurt you in some way. And then look at this person carefully. And examine the feelings that you have towards this person. Let those feelings permeate as well. Then finally, shift your attention to the so-called stranger, the person you just barely know. You don't necessarily like them or dislike them. And then look carefully at the person and your feelings of indifference. Now think about and recognize the nature of the relationships with each of these three people and the labels that you've put on them based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think about people in the past who have been your friend and then became your enemy, and vice versa. Or a stranger who became a friend or an enemy. Each of these labels is temporary and impermanent, and it's just based on the situation at the current time. Move your attention back to your friend and imagine a situation that would cause that friendship to end. That may have happened in the past. Probably has. Imagine your friend turning against you and then experience that resentment and anger and hurt that you'd feel in that situation. Do you still feel warm and friendly feelings towards that person? Do you still wish him or her well and want the person to be happy? Where is your friend now? Remember that the person was not your friend before you were acquainted. And then realize how easily the person can stop being your friend, just as you imagined just now. Think to yourself that there's no real sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only a friend at this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can easily become tomorrow's enemy. Now move your attention to the person who you've labeled enemy before. And imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become close. A common interest, a word of praise or kindness, look at the person and your feelings towards them very carefully as they've done this nice thing to you. Are your feelings softening, becoming warmer? You can learn to feel warmly toward your enemies. It's happened before and it'll happen again. Why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely an enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or an enemy, respectively. There is no inherent, definite stranger there. And there's no sound reason for the feelings of indifference that we hold to them. If you recall, your present friend or present enemy were both strangers to you beforehand. and this stranger could become friend or enemy now. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you. Think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It's only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels, friend, enemy, stranger, that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger all want happiness just as much as you do in this respect. So we're all equal. And everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve clarity and compassion. The differences that we see in people are superficial and based on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone's deserving of care and compassion. None of this means we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is important. And naturally, we feel closer to some people, and we're wise to keep distance from others. But that's not contradictory to this meditation. The point of this is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being. Whether they help or harm us at this point in time. And for us to see that the labels that we put on others are arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. That was a pretty long and detailed meditation, but did you get the point? Were you able to change people through that process? We've all had experiences where people have changed, or our perception, our label of people have changed, right? Any thoughts about that type of meditation?
It was hard to imagine enemies because I usually just don't talk to people I don't like.
Okay.
Well, it was hard to imagine a friend becoming an enemy. It was easier for me to imagine just growing apart, like me moving somewhere and just stop talking on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
That's way, like, they more become indifferent than enemies.
Okay.
For me. That's what I wanted to say.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. That's good. Sometimes that indifference, though, is a change, right? I mean, that's a different label too. You almost revert them back to stranger, right? Just kind of indifferent. That's good. Other thoughts? Yes, sir. Matt.
Yeah, kind of take it back to the car analogy. I'm kind of, that's using my stressful part of the day is when I drive, so it's easy for me to picture, you know, if there was someone driving, cutting you off, or going too slow, it's kind of like, what if that was my, you know, mother driving, or my father, or my grandfather driving, you know, kind of have that, like, oh, okay, I understand now, kind of give it some, you know, a little empathy toward that person, as opposed to just some complete stranger who's there to just make your day horrible, you know, just kind of,
right. Yeah.
And what if that was just, you know, someone who's just, you know, it's dark out or it's raining. They're just trying to be safe drivers, and you just got to kind of appreciate that. So,
right.
It's kind of, so what one person, my friend, might do, it's fine, but if someone who might irritate me does the exact same thing, you know, that's enough just to tip it over the edge.
That's right.
It doesn't really, you know, there's no reason why it should be a difference.
That's right.
Two, so.
That's right. That's a good point. There was a story I read recently in a business, I think it was, I don't remember what the journal was, but they talk about this equanimity thing in that regard. And they said, you know, you had prepared a presentation, and someone that annoys you said, I've got some suggestions for your presentation, right? It's like, well, all right, you know, what do you mean, you know? But if a friend said, you know, I've got some suggestions, like, oh, they're trying to help me. You know, it's the same thing. We have this preconceived label, and then the information that comes from that person, we label it as either good or bad. Could be the exact same behavior, you know, but we put that label on it. So, good. Anything else? You know, and it is just a matter of switching your mind, you know. We succumb to the reptile, you know, the fight or flight kind of thing. But we can just make up a new story. And you start making up these new stories with greater and greater frequency, which is kind of the goal. Replace the bad stories with better stories, you know. And it's all choice. We get to choose. There's a book, Alan Wallace, Choosing Reality, right? We get to choose our realities. And we do. All the time, but we don't always do them in a healthy and beneficial way. All right. We have time for one more meditation I was going to do. And so just kind of bear with me. This is another analytical one. Again, I'm cramming a couple of classes into one here, so we'll stack them up. So get yourself comfortable. 7 points. This will be a little quicker. A couple of big breaths in and out and relax. And clear your mind again. Like an etch-a-sketch, right? You shake it, you get it. Start with a clean slate. This is going to be a little age dependent, so wherever you're at in life, you'll have to adjust accordingly a little bit. But imagine you're sitting here in this room, and the door to the back opens up, and in walks this person 10 or 15 years younger than you. And as they get closer, you notice that it is you 10 or 15 years ago. they walk over and sit across from you, and you begin to have a conversation with this person, what would that conversation be like? Would you like that person? And would they like you? Then imagine the door opens again, and someone walks in, maybe 10 or 15 years older, and then you recognize that's you in the future. And they come over and sit down. The younger person moves aside, and they sit down across from you. And you have a conversation with that person. What might that conversation be like? Would you like them, and would they like you? Once more, the door opens to the back, and there's a frail person walks in and slowly walks over. This is you at 100. And they sit down across from you, what would that conversation be like? What feelings might they have towards you now? And what feelings would you have towards them? Were you able to go through that visualization? Yeah. Struggle. Anybody find that one useful? Yeah. Some interesting conversations that can take place. So, over the last few weeks, we've had opportunity to look at, just developing focus, recognizing thoughts and emotions as they arise, to begin kind of working with those thoughts and emotions a little bit, maybe changing them, redirecting them. We did focused meditations, you know, the two main type, focused meditation and then analytical meditation, where we actually tried to think through something related to reality, right? If possible. Maybe a reality that we don't normally think about on a day-to-day basis, but we should. We should think about more regularly. Hopefully we've got everybody at least beginning to set up some kind of practice on a regular basis. The regularity will increase the more you work with it. It'll hopefully expand the more you work with it. The length of time that you sit. Your need to sit will increase. I use sit to mean, you know, meditation practice. Your need will. You go on vacation and you don't get a chance to sit for a week and you realize, I miss my pillow. You know, I miss my meditation time. That's good when you start developing that. And you will. You know, you'll start to develop that sense. You know, be easy on yourself. It's not, you know, don't try to set goals so much as just try to allow things to develop as you sit. Don't have a lot of expectations, I guess. Try to relax and stay more focused at the same time. Kind of contradictory, but that's kind of the goal. And that'll get easier and easier. Any other things, maybe the anger kind of lessens, the blood pressure kind of lowers, your ability to focus on things might increase substantially. You know? You'll maybe develop a softer heart, you know, which is a good thing. A little more compassion for people just in general, you know. You'll see things. You'll see people get angry, and you'll develop a sense of compassion for them because you know that they're suffering more on the inside. It's worse on the inside than it is on the outside, you know. And that's a good thing to develop then too. Anybody have any final comments or questions or concerns or obstacles, things that we didn't discuss? Well, that was easy. Everyone gets a star.
We're so relaxed.
There you go. All right. So relaxed. Yeah, well, I hope this was helpful. And, you know, get the handouts if you haven't gotten them. Begin to develop that practice. Find material you can read and work on a little bit deeper. There's a lot of stuff out there. You know, it's a whole new world on the inside that you get to begin to explore a little bit deeper. And again, not there's so many people out there in the world. Out of the 7 billion people out there, there's not many people that are doing this, not nearly enough. You know, so it's something that you really want to continue working on. I encourage you to come back to the center for Buddhism in a Nutshell if you haven't done that. Discovering Buddhism, that's a good program to get involved with. You know, it's still pretty basic stuff, but it's a 2-year, it's not a commitment, but it's 2 years long. So, you know, there's a different modules that you'll cover over that 2-year period. Come listen to Ravina next week, and she'll be here a number of nights, so I really encourage you to do that. And then there's other teachers that come here on a regular basis too. Everybody's got a little something that they can add, you know. You take what's useful, and that's the thing about Buddhism, is they don't want you just to swallow it. You know, the idea is to take it, practice it, think about it. If it helps, good. If it doesn't help, just push it off to the side. You may find later on down the road that that helps. You know, you come back at something. But they want you to examine it like you would examine gold that you're going to buy, is the analogy that they use. You know? Really, really work with it to make sure it's going to be helpful. So, all right, 8:30. Y'all have a safe trip home. We'll hopefully see y'all next week with Rabina here, and look forward to seeing you again in the future. Thank you all
hey,
for
David.
Coming. You're welcome.
Can I do one fast little announcement?
Oh, yeah, yeah, please.
So this is just a quick, fast little announcement for everybody. We don't charge anything for the any of the courses that we do here. We offer everything for free. We were, I think, one of the first FPMT centers that didn't charge, or one of the few, at least, that didn't charge for classes. So, and David doesn't get paid to do anything, any of this, which he should be. Chris doesn't get paid to be our AV awesome guy, which he should be. So we have a lot of people who just basically, the place is run by volunteers, but we do have to pay for lights and everything like that. So if you found this useful and you care to give a couple of dollars, we have donation boxes out here. You can donate online and just totally voluntary. If you feel like this was useful and you want to give something to help us keep the lights on, that's always, always welcome. Thank you. Come see Venerable Rabina.
She's going to be here.